But you know, I'm not completely.
Go ahead, and I can tell you afterwards. You see, I'm trying to pull you up before you go down that line for a reason.
Okay.
And here's the reason. That's why I also mentioned we didn't take other things into consideration. If the NSRL was 10%, okay, on an item that you sourced from the United States, made in China, that you bought in the United States for $200, okay?
Yeah.
If the price from the United States remained at $200 and the NSRL was removed, then the price of that item should come down. Right?
Okay.
Good. What the WhatsApper was saying, and by the way, the WhatsApper was not just somebody who was talking, okay? I saw the email, and the person is a customs broker. That's why they could make those statements, because they're regularly in touch with the import-export market in Barbados. What the person was saying is this. If that item remains at $200 and the NSRL comes off, you should see a reduction in price. However, if the item sourced in the U.S. market, originating in China, is subject to Donald Trump's 20% tax, they will no longer be paying $200. They may not be paying
more.
Right. And if in addition to that, freight charges in the U.S. go up because of oil prices going up, you will pay more. Precisely. So the 10% NSRL that has come off will not be reflected immediately. No, but the reason why I'm telling you is this. There's a reason why I'm telling you. What I would like the public to understand is what I've just said to you. And I want them to understand that the only thing that will put pressure on the market to ensure that there is not drastic, unexplained increases in prices is to pressure the market. I want to ask you this question as a consumer. You remember when in Barbados, in order to purchase a VCR, you had to make a down payment and a monthly payment on a VCR? You did it run that long? You remember that?
Yeah. I understand what you're getting.
No, I didn't buy one neither. But I want to tell you, when VCRs came in, you said I make a down payment on a VCR. By the time VCRs became the norm, you can walk in and you still pick up one for $200.
Right?
There was, when, I think it was under the Onatha administration, when VAT was removed from computer products, when VAT was removed from computer products, it was possible to go into a computer store and get a monitor, a computer monitor, for $500.
Okay.
That was essentially a flat screen TV. You could plug in anything to it.
Right.
You, us, them, we, multi-choice, direct TV, anything could plug into the back of it because they had about 26 ports. But a flat screen TV then was $1,800, while a VC, computer monitor was $900. Look at the price of flat screen TVs now. You could get one for $300.
Okay.
Because of market forces and demand and people going and bringing it overseas, and the price came down. If we insist, I heard you talking about some item that was $300 more. A young lady here, I told her, put honey on ham. And she told me, honey, it's $23 a bottle. I say, if you buy it at $23 a bottle. But I've seen it go from $3 and $5 to $23. That means I can buy it at $23 because I want honey. I can go by the honey man around the corner there, so I'll ask you how much for a bottle of honey. So if you want to put your honey in the supermarket at $30, put it at $30. I don't have to buy it. It can stay there and harden, and you can throw it away. I know you have insurance that'll pay for it, but you can stay there and harden.
Yeah.
So we need to understand that you need to bring pressure and say to somebody, yes, I want a beer, but I am not going to pay you $20 for a beer if I could walk down the road and get $5 for $6 or $5 for $10. I'm not going to do it. I understand why you have it there, but I ain't buying it from you. Goodbye. And let you do something about it.
But Mr. Johnson,
yes, sir.
You couldn't be more in that than myself.
But I know, but you see, your problem, I can tell you where you and I fall out all the time. You and I fall out all the time because you all keep going to this word, price gouging. And I tell you, price gouging is a particular charge and it's not what is happening. So if you accuse a man of price gouging and you cannot prove it, he can get away with it. What you need to say is he is raising his prices indiscriminately and you can't see why. And tell him I'm going somewhere else.
So, Mr. Johnson,
yes,
you know that I've gotten back money here. Look, how much times I get back money? You could, how much times I sell out here? 25,000 times? I get back money.
Yes.
But Mr. Johnson, I want you to follow me.
I follow you all the time, you know, sir. That's why we can have a conversation.
Yeah, listen. Let me tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Look, we are not given, mm-hmm. or in our core, we are not given to the culture of boycotting and saying, look, we are not buying it.
Because it makes us look good, sir. Look at me this way, right?
Uh-huh.
We like this thing called image. So if every Christmas the neighbor sees a van pulling up in front and offloading new furniture, we feel good. We have gone up in status. We buying things. A new car every 18 months. Look nice in the driveway. The neighbors can get jealous and they can go and buy another one too. Right? You notice what happened? You notice what happened when government said they're taking off NSRL? Car companies went crazy.
Yeah.
We beaten the rush. $8,000 off, $5,000 off.
Yeah,
and a man get on radio and say, a little 5,000. Well, I wish he would give me the little 5,000 because I don't get that a month. I would like to have the little 5,000.
So,
the day after the budget presentation, I went and checked.
Right.
The days between the budget presentation and July 1st, the removal of road tax, I drove along Highway 7 on purpose.
Yeah.
To look at the used car lots there.
Right.
They went from having 400 cars on a lot to having about 20 in about 3 days.
Okay. Okay.
But we ain't got money, right? Things hard. But yeah, because of those things, people say, aha, I could get a car now. I ain't got to pay road tax. Let me get it now. I did holding on long enough. So that's how we shop. That's how we trigger. There's a trigger in us that says, this is the time to get it.
So government
could talk about drain on the foreign reserves. Government could talk about tightening budget. The minute you get a break, people say, let me grab something. That's the trigger in us.
I'm going to emphasize and reiterate a bit here with Mr. Corey Lane has got something in the pipeline. I need that. I need for him to fast track and get something established that people can be. You say that people need to be taught civics.
Mm-hmm.
And I fought for you tremendously with that. They need to be taught other things too. look, I go on.
You, sir, you have a good day here.
Thank you, sir.
Let me tell you something else. This company, thanks for your contribution, sir. One of the companies in Barbados, I think, do an excellent job of customer relations and public relations is the Barbados Light and Power Company. I say so all the time. Jackie and the team, they are on the ball. When we got a question, if we ask it, by the time the program halfway through, we get an answer from them. Saw this WhatsApp message sent to me that said, good morning, Dennis. 2 months ago, I went home and noticed that the Barbados Light and Power Company had changed my meter. My light bill has almost doubled with this new digital meter. The light bill has moved from $135 to $235. On checking with some of my workmates and friends, they have noticed the same jump in their bills. I have a friend whose bill has jumped from $300 to almost $600. Someone needs to explain how these meters work from the company to give us some understanding. I said to the person, the new meters are perhaps more efficient at recording your use. And each electric strip that you have plugged in, you know those with the switch with all the red and green lights on, every cordless phone, cell phone charger, those stores with the electronic starts that have plugs at back, all those things use electricity. Your stereo sets with the remote controls, all of those use electricity. And you need to understand that when you leave home with all those things plugged in. Person came back and said, understood. I think the public needs to be educated on this. When leaving home, simply unplug TVs, microwaves, the flashing mode. Same with PCs, DVDs. You're talking about using electricity secretly. And yes, indeed, what's happening is that we don't pay attention to it. Because, listen, you know what to do? Go outside at any time in the day and look at the meter, the old meters that got the thing spinning around, and see how fast it's spinning around, right? Then go inside and turn on the microwave or the washing machine or something and go back outside and look and see how fast it's spinning around. There are some things that pull a lot of electricity. There are others that don't pull as much, but we have it on all the time. All them little red lights and green lights that are blinking all around the house, they're pulling electricity. And what is happening is that more and more, in addition to the changes in the cost of fuel, etc., fuel charge, you're pulling electricity. with all them things you got to plug in. Okay? Just telling you. But Jackie and the team, you know, respond to your customers. They ask the question. I give them the best answer I could. And that's because they educate us as moderators. They call us in from time to time and keep us updated. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You know, sometimes I really wonder if people hear what I say. Somebody sent me a message here saying, they're glad that I'm impressed with the Barbados Light and Power Company, that they, and their troops too at my answer. Good to know you're impressed with the Barbados Light and Power, Mr. Johnson. We've been waiting for over 6 months for them to fix the street light, despite the residents and their own meter reader reporting it months ago. I said the PR department is not the same thing, and the person's response was troops. Okay. I guess my response is, have a good day. I changed my bulbs to LEDs, and my electricity bill was cut in half. We have to learn how to fix things the best we could and take decisions into our own hands. Anyhow, I guess. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
Well, good morning to every person who's listening to my voice, too. First thing, let me explain to you. First, let me explain to you. I have three topics I'm going to say to you. I'm going to concentrate on one.
Okay.
But I need to put them out there, and you can also make a note of them if you want to.
Anytime.
And later on, you probably will respond. Listen, first thing, I want this tax that's going to go on the online shopping. A lot of persons are not really speaking on it on Brass Tacks, but they're on the street speaking about it. And it's a serious concern. Reason why. We know the 2% is there already. When this 17 whatever point goes on, which is the other tax on the purchases, when the persons do that online and the items have to be shipped here at the port of entries, they're still going to have to pay taxes on it, which means they're getting a real whammy there, double taxing. I want the persons who implemented or who are probably dealing with it to listen carefully and probably look at it and come back with it again.
Because, that's one. Why?
Because it'll be unfair that one segment of society is paying double when the other ones will not be doing it. Everybody's contributing.
Which other one?
Listen carefully.
If
you put on the online, right, from the time you purchase, it starts right there and then. The money will be deducted from your whatever it is you purchase. And then when it comes in, it's shipped here.
But who are the others are not paying then? You say one section paying and the other section not paying. Who is the section that not paying?
Okay, I get where you're coming from. You're trying to say
I'm asking a question. I ain't coming from nowhere.
Okay, listen to this carefully. To me, as far as I'm understanding what I'm listening to, is that for any time you make an online purchase, you pay the taxes on that. When it's shipped here, when you get a port of entries and customs have to do what I have to do, you pay on it. Now, I understand where you're going. You're trying to say that whatever comes in here, the persons have to pay taxes on it also.
And whoever purchasing the product wherever they're purchasing from, the foreign exchange tax has been taken off?
But that, remember, that's the 2% that they implemented before. That is going to get taken off. They weren't saying anything about that yet.
Right.
That's still there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I am looking at it on the point of view of when it comes, the only way to me, persons, everybody will pay the same, is if you double up on when you're selling it. That's the only way it could happen, that everybody will be fair. But if you do it that way, it means the persons who's purchasing online, and for the time they get here, they're going to be paying double. They're going to be taxing double. Anyway, that's just one. Number two, I want to thank Mark. The last time when I called the program, when I was speaking to Miss Lisa Gale about when I hit the topic of being rewarded, persons are being rewarded for corruption. He called in after I made the statement and he didn't attack me either. He said he understood. This is what I would like happen on Brass Tacks. It would go a little bit more, you know, thing for everybody. If persons call the program and are not really understanding what's going on, they put something out there, you don't have to call or make a WhatsApp saying the person is an idiot or the stupid or they should understand. Because it has been proven here right now, there's a lot of persons that are saying that this person should understand about the implementation and the raise of the non-contributor pension towards the person's normal pension. And here it's proven that those persons out there understood what they thought they understood, but now they're getting to realize that there are more questions to be answered about the implementation or the raise of the taxes. So you see, don't call and judge people and insult them because there are things that, because it do not mean it does not respond to your query, that you have to be like that. So let's be more, you know, sensible and humane to each other and listen to those persons who call. It may not make sense to you, but try to get answers, which is education. Anyway, next one, this is one that I want to talk about. I'm speaking about corruption. Tell me this. If you have persons who are living on land that was not sold to them, what we call the squatters, and was not agreed to by any place or any authorities in the land, they knew they went there, they knew they break the law, but they are saying, and some of them are saying, well, I was told that when I put here, I don't have to move. When we get in elections, when we come to power, you can stay here. I am not calling any particular party. I am not saying there's any particular minister. I'm just saying if persons happen to be able to come, if they have to go to court, and they are questioned, and they happen to say that, and that was revealed, how would the corruption deal with this aspect of it when we are looking at corruption right now? Would persons or the corruption committee bypass these type of things, or would that be also called? Because remember, you're doing a favor to get power. Are we only going to look at the $1 million, or are we going to look at everything as in corruption? Are we going after from millions and up? Or are we going after whatever constitutes or supposed to be a form of corruption?
What do you see as being corrupt?
What do I see as being corrupt?
Mm-hmm.
Well, as they say, empowering oneself in office when they went there and that was not what they're supposed to do. However, if you happen to say to some person before, I guide them in a way which is actually breaking the law in the beginning, and explain to them that you are the person or one of the persons who can make sure they don't have to move from the spot after you know they have broken the law, to me that is corruption.
Okay, well, unless you bring a law that says that you can't make them kind of promises, you dead in the water, sir. That's all I can tell you. Unless you have a statute that says promising a man that is against the law, well, they, you know, promises are made all the time. The thing, the challenge is this. If we have institutions that are supposed to ensure that you have documented proof of ownership of a piece of land before you connect water to it, if you're supposed to have a town planning certificate before you attach electricity, if you're supposed to have this, that, the other, there is no way that you could put a house on a piece of land that does not belong to you and have amenities attached to it, if the system works the way it's supposed to work. So when we look at things like the Auditor General's report that says, when I ask for this, I don't get that. And until we get to the stage where we empower those institutions, the Auditor General and whatever other Financial Services Commission that says, if you do not bring your report by X, if we do not have a logical explanation by Y, somebody has to go to the DPP, the DPP has to go to court, this matter should be, you know, it has contravened section A, B, C, and D, and therefore whoever did A, B, C, and D should face the consequences in paragraph 4, section whatever, whatever. Until we get to that stage, sir, we can continue to, you know, come up with this what ifs and maybe if and perhaps the person should, and enriching yourself while in public office. If the fine for enriching yourself while in public office is $500 and you could make $15 million while in public office, you ain't thinking of pay the $500 and skin your teeth? I just saying. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Joe Dennis.
And to you too, sir.
How are you doing this morning?
I am doing all right. Thanks for explaining me the other day. Apparently, you could explain me better than me. but at least you understood what I was saying. So I was happy that you explained it. I wouldn't have to do it twice. Yes, sir.
That's before I get into my main topic, you know, is that I got to do some explaining again.
Again, okay.
As it relates to I think it was the first or the second caller when you had to cut him short.
Because, the fellow who made the parliamentary statement?
Yes.
That was made in parliament, yeah.
Yeah. No, one of the things that a lot of Barbadians don't understand, I think that some of them do it out of ignorance, but they don't understand, Dennis, is that the repeating of a statement, right, that is defamatory by a third party, Dennis, does not shield him in any way, shape, or form or fashion from any action that can be brought against him.
I know that. So I know that.
It doesn't shield him, right? And you also made a point speaking to the gentleman about drawing inferences. No inference on causation can be drawn from circumstantial evidence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because that circumstantial evidence, Dennis, is evidence that relates on an inference to connect to a conclusion of fact. But the problem, what ties the hands of the individual now is the same causation, you know, which is the act of a process of causing something to happen. Now, if you don't know what caused it to happen, then you can't draw inference.
Well, I was trying to tell the gentleman that, and I think he hopefully he understood.
Yeah. Now, the next thing I want to go to, Dennis, is this whole, the last caller who spoke with David yesterday
about pensions.
Yes.
Survivor's benefit, I think she was talking about.
Yes, and the non-contributing. Dennis, let me tell you what is at the heart of this, right? What is at the heart of this, right, is selfishness. This whole discussion is driven by selfishness. I know I can offend some people, but I must say it, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I know you don't like the sometimes to be told about scripture, but sometimes
no, hold. Get me straight. I have no problem with scripture. You know what I don't like is people condemning me.
Right. Okay, but go ahead.
I have no problem with it at all.
I'm happy because I can go there. I will go there first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Christ's disciples ask him, "What is the greatest commandment?" Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "Hear, O Israel, thy Lord is one Lord, and love
thy neighbor as thyself."
As thyself.
Yeah.
Right.
And he was asked, "Who is thy neighbor too?"
Right.
As far as I recall.
But your neighbor is anyone who is.
That's what he pointed out. Yes.
Of your thoughts.
That's what he pointed out. Yeah.
Right. That's right. Now, some people interpret this to mean that they speak about you know, say love thy neighbor. Some people say they love them. Not like them, like. So is interchange accordingly with the word like.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the same Matthew 20, right, spoke about a man who had a vineyard who went up to get some people to hire some people one morning. Some were hired early in the morning, and some were hired at the 11th hour. War broke out, Mr. Johnson, at the end of the day. Because those who came in the afternoon and worked got the same penny as those who came from the morning. And the question was asked by the owner of the vineyard is, did I not agree with you for a penny? The answer was, yeah. He said, so what's the problem? You agree with a penny. These come at 2 o'clock and you come at 11. But so the point I'm trying to make in this, right, is selfishness is at the root of this, and what the government needs to do going forward, Dennis, in an effort to shield themselves from any further repeats of this, right, is that I believe that self-employed persons, Dennis, I'm going to walk you through this, and you can have a conversation with me on it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that self-employed persons in this country, such as barbers and hairdressers and landscapers and tailors and masons and carpenters and so on, consultants who by any profession, Dennis, mechanics, bodywork men, even Zara drivers and minibus drivers who are working on a contractual arrangement. I believe that what the government needs to do going forward is that the government needs to set out a time where they want all of these individuals to have an IS number where they can make a contribution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people ask the question, how would you police it? Now, this is my take on how you police it. The persons whose profession relies on driving, you tie the renewal of their driver's license to the update of their national insurance. The other individuals, we can have personnel attached to the NAS department, that how you have zone officers who, when the information comes out to the machine of any delinquent individuals, those persons then will be sought after by these individuals who will be manning different zones to ensure that these persons comply. And that when you bring, let's say, for argument's sake, Dennis, that you are going to come on January 1st for the implementation of it, they will have an eight-month period to get in line, and then you bring the legislation that those persons know who are caught working outside, not having an NAS number and not making any contribution, will then feel the full weight of the law. Now, in this case, you will not have the question of non-contributory pension, because all and sundry will be contributing. So the lame argument that you hear, that people also contribute because when they're going to the market, they pay a VAT. No, they will be brought once they can pay, and once they can contribute, they contribute. Because the truth is, the argument for which you led yesterday with David, I understand it fully, right. But the problem is, I don't think any of us are in a position, Dennis, to say definitively that a person should have contributed, because we don't know the circumstances.
I agree. So I have to say to you, one of the, I understand what you've said. My late uncle spent a lot of time working on NIS matters. My old man in Trinidad also worked on NIS matters there, and I grew up, you know, knocking around between the two of them. One of the things that was pointed out by my old man, I was being peculiar to Trinidad and Tobago, was because laborers, especially those of East Indian descent and African descent from what we usually term the lower echelons, because they did multiple jobs for people all over the place periodically, there was no steady income stream. And because some of them worked with various names, you know, this over here, you'd be Sonny Boy Mohammed. Over there, you'd be Boboy Mohammed. Over there, you know, I'd be Sonny Johnson. Across there, I'd be Dennis Johnson. These people were not tracked by the system.
Right.
And therefore, finding a way to put them on the same level as someone like Peter, who says, you know, I don't see why I should pay NIS because I'm making my own provision. And he says so openly. And professionals who say, I'm making my own way, I am not going to contribute to NIS because, you know, I spent 6 months in Grenada, 3 months in Dominica, 4 months in St. Lucia. I have, you know, I'm making my own way. You can't put those two people on the same level. And what you're saying about, you know, the registration, and it makes sense. The problem is that there are some people who, well, you put it down to being, you know, the what we call the human nature of jealousy and that kind of thing, envy, who would say, look, Mr. X down the road, he lived high on the hog, changed his car, big house, did not pay NIS, and he getting a pension. And he getting $10 more than me and $20 more than me. And we pick on these figures because it's part of our human nature. I don't think we'll ever have a perfect system, but we need to find the best method of doing it. And to me, the most important part is communication. Because if the NIS and government, Minister of Finance, whomever, if they don't communicate regularly with the public when these things spring up and explain where the funds are coming from, why it's being done, efforts that are being made to make it more equitable, you will always just have this, what I call, anger against each other.
Another thing I want to say to Dennis, in the event that because some people would say, but a barber may make $1,000 this week, but next week he may
make nothing.
Make,
yeah. Right. Or the man cutting grass, yeah.
Right. All we have to do, Dennis, is that you find a middle ground between the highest
and
the lowest.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm. And then place him in a particular tax bracket. Another thing is that the Minister of Commerce and Small Business, you know, the Prime Minister is on record as saying that $10 million would make available as a revolving loan for persons who want to get involved in entrepreneurship, persons who have ideas and want to have the ideas grow. I would implore the government at this stage that if they are going if they're still going ahead with this, that they ensure that these small entrepreneurs who are coming out to make themselves readily available for the borrowing of these funds, mm-hmm. ensure that they are registered with NIS mm-hmm. and that they will make a contribution. Mm-hmm.
That is where, to me, right? That is where I think we need to spend a lot more time, effort, and expertise in making sure. Because if we're talking about more people have to be culled from either the public or the private sector, that they have to be, they'll be allowed to go into their own businesses, that, you know, we want to bring this entrepreneurial class and small business, lift the profile of our small businesses, we have to provide auditing facilities, teaching them how to prepare bank statements, present proposals, and how to manage a business. And that includes paying yourself. So I know people who owned small hotels who said they didn't pay themselves a salary. I was asked to manage one for a couple of years by a friend of mine, and I turned him down because I said to him, if you do not know how much you make on a daily basis, and if you do not pay yourself, you ain't going to be able to pay me. Because you're going to end up one day saying, but I spent all I got yesterday and can't pay you this month. Everything has to be streamlined. He eventually did it because he got an advisor from somewhere else, a manager who made him do it. I've worked at a small hotel and that's what they did. They managed their finances. They had someone who handled their accounts. There are people who don't know the business of business. And it goes to calypsonians, producers, barbers, you name it, the guy who cuts grass. Until we get all people to understand that business means you have to have certain disciplines. And if you don't have it, someone has to provide it for you. And this thing about we not trusting each other because somebody will carry away the idea, we got to get over that too, sir.
But then you recall in closing, you recall that the when Arthur led administration was piloting this whole the removal altogether mm-hmm. of persons who did not contribute. You remember
yeah, I remember that discussion? Yeah, I remember that discussion, yeah.
Right, good. Mm-hmm. Now, and that's the point that I want to make, and I hope that the lady who called David yesterday is listening. That what was observed, Dennis, is that in as much as that was the route that the former administration, the Onafa-led administration, wanted to go, the direction they wanted to go in, mm-hmm. the challenge with that, Dennis, is that there would have been a massive fallout if the government had gone that route. So that is why I am saying, for if the government is now going to keep the non-contributory pension in place going forward, what they need to do is to bring all on board that at a time there will be a full phase out of the non-contributory pension because the rules and laws will be in place to
that
ensure
won't have any.
Precisely, mm-hmm. everybody coming on board going forward will be contributing. So you won't have this discussion, you won't have the argument, and everybody will be happy.
My concern, sir, is that we look seriously at ensuring that all the NIS funds are properly managed, that all the funds that should go into the NIS go into the NIS, that our investment portfolio is returned to some measure of balance and stability, and that the financial affairs of this country once and for all gets corrected. And I'll tell you why I say this. I remember under the Erskine Sandiford administration, and Sir Lloyd, if it was not your administration, I apologize. The limit of borrowing from the central bank was raised, and by the time it was raised, it was broken again, so it had to be raised again. We have this fiasco that occurred over the last 10 years with, we don't know how much was borrowed from the NIS, how much was promised, how many loans were guaranteed, where it is. We have multiple reports from the Auditor General.
Actuarial report, isn't there?
Yeah. And we have multiple reports from the Auditor General that talk about the disarray in our finances. Places, you know, statutory corporations, they don't report on time and this thing. You cannot go to an international agency and ask for a program or funding to bring your country up to a certain level if your finances are in disarray. If you go to a banker and you say, I want to borrow $20,000 to fix my house, and you can't give him an outline of your expenses and your income, you're not going to get the money. And that's the bank for $20,000. Okay? So if, I mean, take it down to that level. If your finances are in disarray, you can't make a good presentation. So you're going to be behind the eight ball. So we need to understand when some of us talk about governance, it ain't about B or D or Krasinkle or this or that or the other. It's about the structures that we put in place that we tear down. And it's wrong, wrong, wrong. I don't care who's sitting in parliament. It's wrong. If you could tell me that you have a housing estate and that somebody could, say, deduct from my salary and then go back and rip up the agreement and 11 years later, 8%, something wrong. You cannot avoid paying rent for 11 years and get away with it. It's wrong.
It brings me back to what you had spoken to me when I first started my contribution. With this whole notion of going after this high level of corruption that showed an ugly head in this country, I would be very happy if persons can be brought to justice. But the challenge that we are facing, Dennis, in so doing, is that our legislation, our constitution, and what transpire does not in sync with each other. So I am at a loss as to how someone will be brought before the court in handcuffs if we ain't got certain things in place. Because that is the only way we can challenge this, right? Is simply this. If you call in all of the contracts that went on in the last 10 years, you decide, well, okay, let's bring in quantity surveyors. And if there was a contract for $10 million, I want independent quantity surveyors to give me an idea of what this building would originally have cost. And let me say the project started in 2009. Let us look at the prices in 2009. So the cost of cement, the cost of nails, the cost of lumber at that particular point in time.
Still will not work.
it's still getting me confusing.
Well, but what will happen is that people will have expectations that won't be delivered. So I hear what you're saying, you know. Let me say this to you. Here is where our system breaks down, okay? And this is what we need to fix. And I do not know whether we have the political will, the legislative will, or ever to fix it. Here's the problem. If I decide that we should have, an electric bus stand, just to pick something. The international agencies say an electric bus stand in Barbados should cost $11 million. You send me a bid for $8 million. John Stout sitting across here sent me a bill for $18 million. And for some reason, known only to me and John Stout gets the contract for $18 million. Right? And by the time John Stout gets into the building of this electric bus stand, it's $27 million. Now, who are we going to lock up and for what?
But
you see, that's what happens all the time, sir, with little contract, big contract, alleged contracts. That's what keeps happening, and we're not fixing that. Something has to be wrong with that system, sir.
That is the only thing then. That's why I brought you back to the same scenario. Because the only thing then is that if the independent quantity surveyors came up with a cost in 2009 after the implementation of the project and said that this would have cost $11 million, then someone would have to explain then the other $9 million
because we have this line that we have put into these contracts, sir, saying it does not bind us to accept the lowest or any bid. And we just use that to get away all the time. Law written by lawyers so that lawyers could have a job. Look, it's one of the reasons why I stayed far from it. Because the public perception is that it is unfair, that it is unjust, but that it is what exists. And we seem to just wait on, divine intervention or something to suddenly fix it for us.